Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. Your house, the house of the future, may be built start to finish within 24 hours. Imagine. We're just going to clear the space. We're going to build a house from scratch within 24 hours. And they are currently building them at that pace. The house of the future. And some political thoughts as I enter in here live from Austin, South by Southwest. We begin there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Welcome to the program. So glad that you are. So glad that you're here. A couple of things. First of all, I guess women are not attracted to science, and it's because we haven't made girls feel welcome in science.
Well. Clearly, Glenn, girls have not been nurtured in a safe space, that has to stop because we must have them in the science industry, whether they want to be there or not.
Right.
I mean, right. Have we asked girls, do you want to be in science? I mean, who is telling a girl, sorry, honey, you can't get into the field of science.
Daddy,
absolutely.
I wanna get into science.
No, girls are too stupid. You cannot be a scientist. There's no such thing as a girl scientist. In 27, who's saying that? Nobody. But this education specialist at Queensland University in Australia is saying that girls from 10 to 14 have to be nurtured in a safe space.
May I ask, is anyone nurturing guys in a positive direction? Is anyone saying to our boys, you're needed, you're valuable?
Absolutely not.
You have something important to contribute? Guys are mocked, made fun of, ridiculed, pushed out, given, you know, made into, you know, woman. I am woman. Hear me roar. You're a boy. You might be a girl. I mean, what is happening? I really think this is why progressivism and authoritarianism is about to go off the rails. They always overplay their hand. And I think there is this new undercurrent of anti-authoritarianism that is starting up. And it's on both sides.
It's under the current so much it's drowning. But yes, it is an undercurrent.
You are a little beam of sunshine. When did I become the positive one and you become the negative one?
Sorry about that.
We have switched roles in the last few months.
Mm. Oh, especially Stu. Stu is—he's not in a good positive place right now.
No, you're not. No, but there is, and I don't even begin to understand this. But there is something called libertarian socialism.
What?
Now, not.
That doesn't even make sense.
No, I know. Listen, but this is, see, what's happening is socialism has to the youth, I think, this happy face that, you know, it's all going to work out like it did in the Netherlands. Well, no, the Netherlands, everybody thought alike in the Netherlands. Everybody. It was the most homogenized group of countries of all time. And almost everybody was exactly the same. So it was easy to bring people together. And it did work, but it's not working now. The economics of it are not working now because, whoa, they introduced immigration. And everybody went with their open border policy for the free stuff. And lo and behold, it's not working. And they thought if we just bring people here like us, they're going to want to be like us. Well, the new immigrants didn't want to be like them. And so it's falling apart now. But to the average, 20-something, I think that they believe they look at socialism differently because they've never had the threat of the Iron Curtain before. So they didn't grow up with any of that. They don't know any of that, and they certainly weren't taught.
Yeah, and they don't know what socialism is. They think it's socializing. They think it's social media. Yeah. They think it's a really good thing. Well, you got to explain to them what socialism is what socialism has wrought.
So listen to this, because I just came across this in something I was reading, I don't know, earlier this week, and I don't remember what it was. And I've had to look it up because I'd never heard of it before. But listen to this. See if this makes any sense to you. This is Wikipedia. Libertarian socialism. A group of anti-authoritarian political philosophies inside the socialist movement. Okay? Does that even make sense?
Nope.
Anti-authoritarian socialists that reject socialism as centralized state ownership and control of the economy, as well as the state itself.
Also, see, confused.
Mm-hmm. Right. It doesn't work. It criticizes wage labor relationships within the workplace. I don't even know what that means. Instead, it emphasizes workers' self-management of the workplace. You're just a libertarian. And decentralized structures of political organization. Libertarian.
Not socialist in any way.
In any way. It asserts that a society based on freedom and justice can be achieved through the abolishing of authoritarian institutions that control certain means of production and subordinate the majority of an owning class or political and economic elite. Libertarian socialists advocate for decentralized structures based on direct democracy, that's trouble, and federal and confederal associations such as libertarian municipalism, citizens' assemblies, trade unions, and worker councils. All of this is generally done within the general call for libertarian and voluntary human relationships through the identification, criticism, and practical dismantling of the illegitimate authority in all aspects of human life.
What a bunch of nonsense this is.
Well, it's kind of like I think about the institutionalization of the human psyche.
Right. The collectivization of manufacturing.
I don't know.
Well, one thing I do know is it's a symbol of reversibility. It'll never be taken from the earth.
Here's the problem. As such, libertarian socialism within the larger socialist movement seeks to distinguish itself both from Leninism, Bolshevism, and social democracy. So there's a chance, because these two, this is saying, I am for absolute state control if it gets rid of all absolute state control. It doesn't make sense. These two things don't work together. And I'm wondering if it is the same thing that Lenin did to the masses when he said, guys, we're not communist. We're social democrats.
We're definitely not communists.
Yeah. We're definitely not communists. And it was just a word game that they were playing. Because this, for me at least, may I ask you guys a question? Well, how would you react to, say, let's get a true Marxist professor or somebody who really understands it to, and they don't have to agree with it, just somebody who really understands it, to explain it to us? Because have you guys ever read Das Kapital or any of that other stuff?
What's the
other one?
Not for a couple months.
Das Kapital I've read, and that's the other one, the first one, the Communist Manifesto.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Sure. To me, it's like circular logic. To me, it's reading a foreign language. I just don't get it, and I would really love to hear from somebody who really knows it, explain it to me. To see if it, because I really want to understand it so that I can speak their language and go, okay, well, this doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because I don't even understand it.
It would be interesting to understand it from a person who views it positively point of view. Like, what?
Yeah.
How do you believe that's a good thing? I guess you can kind of think, well, it takes care of the little guy, but it doesn't. But if you believe that,
maybe the audience can help us with. I want somebody who perhaps believes in it, but you don't have to buy into it. Just somebody who can really, truly teach it as it really is. You don't have to believe in it. I just want somebody who can really teach it as it is with no bias against it, because I'm coming with a bias against it. So I'd rather have somebody that I don't know if they're for or against. They're just explaining it on how it all works. Because I've read Das Kapital a couple of times, and I can't make heads nor tails of it. It does not make any sense to me. And so how can we possibly argue with libertarian socialism? We should get somebody who's a libertarian socialist on, mm-hmm. and have them explain this too. And not to change their mind or to beat them up or anything else, just to explain it. That doesn't seem like it would. It doesn't make any sense.
We should also try to get somebody who subscribes to the capitalist socialism theory. That would be interesting as well.
Is there such a thing?
No, but okay, well, there should
in
be.
In today's world?
If there's libertarian socialists, there should be capitalist socialists.
Right.
Because
capitalist collectivists.
Yeah.
I'm a capitalistic collectivist.
There was a party in the United States, a very small party, that was I think it was called the Green Nazi or the Nazi Green Party, and they were a combination of Nazi beliefs and environmentalist beliefs. That's a solid combination.
Is there any difference between the environmentalists and the...
Can I tell you, hang on just a second. That is not so strange. You know who would have been the biggest PETA supporter in the world?
Oh, yeah.
Would have been Adolf Hitler.
Oh, I mean, you go back, in all honesty, if we're talking honestly about this, Hitler's belief of living space was an environmental issue. The fact that he wanted to, it was about him wanting to have more space because he was worried about the concerns of overpopulation.
Yep.
He was concerned about having enough land to make food for everyone to live. He needed living space because he was essentially an environmentalist on that issue.
He was.
Which is hilarious in a bizarre way. But
And what's so strange is he loved animals more than he loved people. He would not. Very heavy crime and penalty if you hurt an animal in Germany. But kill a Jew, kill a person that was against the state, no problem. You have 5 minutes? Go ahead, kill as many as you want. But animals, no. And how much do we see of that mentality still in the world today? That animals are, for instance, try this exercise. You cannot kill a fetus. You can kill a fetus and not go to jail, not pay a fine, nothing. Pat, this weekend, let's just go get some bald eagle eggs out of a nest.
Oh, yeah. You'd go to jail.
That'll work well.
That's a federal crime.
That's an egg.
Yeah.
That's not even a fetus. That's an egg. Mm-hmm. She could just lay the egg. I could go into the nest. I could take the bald eagle egg that I could crack open and make an omelet out of. I will go to jail. Because why? Is that life? Is that egg life? Are you telling me that egg that she just laid that I can eat right now as an omelet, that somehow or another is a baby eagle? No, it's just an egg.
That's a great point. God forbid you go and shoot a lion that's about to kill a family of Nigerians, or you kill a ape that is about to potentially maul a child in front of onlookers.
And had already thrown him 10 feet through the air.
Yeah. I mean, you do that and you're the worst person on earth.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Is that guy from Seattle on with us on Monday? I have a guy who is I think might be a libertarian socialist. I think he might be that guy. I'm not sure. I think libertarian socialism is a capitalist who's not an a-hole. I think that's what they're thinking it is.
Okay.
Somebody who's just not a complete jerk. I love the community and I want to help and we all have to. I think that's what they.
Well, like that's the guy who runs Whole Foods, right? We've had him on the show before. I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but he's a libertarian. But he's a nice libertarian. Is what they look at it. Well, he's a capitalist, but he's nice, and that means he's different than a capitalist. Well, actually, capitalists are nice all the time. Not all of them. They're just people, and some people are nice, and some people are not in all categories. But the way it's vilified, capitalism is vilified. They look at someone like the guy who runs Whole Foods and gives really good health care to his company and things like that as a big exception to the rule, when that's not really the case.
I know, because I'm a heartless bastard who runs a big company and Oh, wait, gives really good health care to his employees. That's weird. Seems like I was bastard just a second ago.
I agree with them on you. But outside of that, I think they don't have a good point.
But that's the problem. They try to make all capitalists into villains unless you're somebody like Steve Jobs,
who is
a capitalist, mm-hmm. and Bill Gates, who's a capitalist and a great guy,
mm-hmm.
doing great things. He loves all the politicians that we love. So he's not really a capitalist. That capitalist is fine. It's crazy.
Course, and unless you look at anything Steve Jobs did and the people who worked around him who did not think
he was
a good guy at all.
I don't know how. I mean, you want to talk about the greatest PR scam of all time is how is Steve Jobs looked on as one of the greatest guys ever when he was truly a monster? I mean, you know what it is? He is the Edison of our day. Edison was a monster. Edison, when he first got the X-ray machine, he would try it on people's arms and he would just take his researchers and say, here, put your arm underneath this for an hour. Let's see what it does. One guy lost an arm because of it. The other guy died of cancer. And Edison was like, okay. So it might have something to do with cancer. You can burn yourself so bad we have to amputate the arm. And he didn't care. And everybody thinks of Edison as this great guy. No, he wasn't. Same with Steve Jobs.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Saw a guy in the Rubin Report yesterday. His name is Colin Moriarty. Have you ever heard of him, guys?
Mm-mm.
He is
I've
a
heard
guy,
of Dr. Moriarty. He's that guy that...
It would be Professor Moriarty, yeah, but it Moriarty. Was a...
But this was on the Rubin
He's also
report.
A doctor. He had a PhD.
This was on...
right. And what was it in?
Murder.
Right. Okay. So anyway, Colin Moriarty, he's a guy who lives in... he's a gamer who's a 20-something that lives in San Francisco. And he is right up our alley. He is a conservative constitutionalist. And by his words, conservative, not mine. I tweeted at him last night. I said, I need to start following you on Twitter. And asked him to be a part of the show. So, Keith, our producer, if you can reach out to him and book him. I think you're going to like this guy. He's a possible candidate for the next generation of conservatism. Where is the conservative movement going? The real conservative movement going? Hopefully, we'll talk to Colin Moriarty on Monday.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
You know, I just checked my private messages on Twitter, which I've never done before. Wow.
A lot.
I should have checked those before. Wow, I just got this one. You ready for this one? Let me see. Where is it? I just got one from Jake Tapper. When I say just got one, about 8 months ago.
Okay, yeah, this is probably not a good thing to read on the air.
Let's and while you're looking over them, deciding whether you actually should read.
Apparently I did something, and he's like, what the hell was that, man? So apparently we were talking about him on the air sometime, and I'm sorry, Jake. I don't know what it was. Sorry. But
you'll
anyway,
have to tweet back to him and tell him
I don't think you should address this any further.
No, I don't think so either.
I wonder what that was. And it was a long time ago, so maybe he forgot until right now. You can communicate privately on Twitter. I mean, people actually do that.
Yeah. Anthony Weiner does it.
Yeah, he sure does.
That's how he got in trouble.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't do that, so don't write me there.
Another thing you can do on Twitter is follow people without telling them you follow them. You can just click the little follow button.
Well, no, I was making a point that I did that, and then I was making a point that other people should follow him as well, because I thought he was very smart. Anyway, is Nick in the studio yet?
Yes. Yes,
we have Nick Adams. I'm in Austin at South by Southwest. We have Nick Adams, who is the author of The Green Card Warrior, which is a book just a few days ago. The president the president of the United States, tweeted out. Nick Adams' new book, Green Card Warrior, is a must-read. The merit-based system is the way to go. Canada, Australia, at Fox and Friends. So how did that work out for you, Nick?
A little boost in sales?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, the last week or so has been pretty much incredible. We cracked the top 100 in the world for book sales.
Wow.
I was on the front page of every single newspaper in the country. I've had the opportunity to spar, and across the world, I've had the opportunity to spar with Piers Morgan over gun rights on Good Morning Britain television.
So Nick, you're the guy who tried to get into the United States for a very long time. You were blocked because you were anti-Obama. At least that's what I would take from it. And I think you kind of took that from it as well. You came here. You're very patriotic. For some strange reason, you fell in love with America in Australia. And now you have founded something. You're the executive director of FLAG, the Foundation for Liberty and American Greatness.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Glenn. I've come to America to make sure that America doesn't turn out like the country I had to leave. I've come to make sure that America doesn't turn out like every other country in the world. That we preserve everything that is special and different and amazing about the United States of America. In almost 5,000 years of recorded human history, we've never seen a country, a culture, or a people like the American people, nation, and culture. And it's really disturbing to me that for several generations now, we have not passed on what it means to be an American, what Americanism is. And so I've come over here and I've set up a 501c3, a nonprofit called FLAG, the Foundation for Liberty and American Greatness, and we go into elementary, middle, and high schools talking to students about what makes America special, what makes America different, why is the Constitution the best political document ever written, what would the world look like without the United States of America, what would the world be like today had it not been for American leadership in the 20th century, why has it been an unparalleled force for good in the world, what has America given the world? So we seek to counter.
I would imagine that you're very popular in Christian schools, some private schools. How are you doing with the public schools with that message?
Glenn, FLAG has been into 35 schools, 31 of which have been public schools.
Out of Texas?
No, in California.
Okay. Yes.
In Florida. Oh, in California.
Florida. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's been all over the place.
In 8 different states. We've already trained more than 4,000 students across 8 different states. And we are one of the fastest growing nonprofits right now in America. We are absolutely killing it. In terms of pushback, you know, when I first started this, people said to me, Nick, this is a fantastic idea, but there's no way in the world that you are ever going to get any public schools to let you in. Well, I'm here to tell you that we are 35-0. The pushback has been very limited. We've had a couple of isolated incidents where a teacher has made a remark or a student has pushed back. But we take that in our stride, and I'm sure that there's going to be more pushback in the future, but we welcome that because that just means that we're being remarkably effective. And
if you want your school to get involved, I guess you would just go to flagusa.org?
That's exactly right, flagusa.org. Okay.
So tell me about how did this tweet from President Obama happen? President Trump happened.
Well, thankfully, President Obama never tweeted about that. That would have been too positive. But no, look, President Trump watched me on television. He'd already had a copy of Green Card Warrior that we had furnished for him some time ago. And he saw me on Fox and Friends talking about a merit-based immigration system and basically saying that we need to bring the best people to America if we're going to make sure that America remains the best country in the world.
Does Australia do that?
We do. Australia does. Canada does. There are a number of countries around the world that employ a particular points grading system, which means that if you've got proficiency in English, if you've got certain jobs, skills, if you've got job prospects, you get a certain amount of weighting for that, and that elevates you.
How is it, Nick, do you think, that it became fashionable to believe that America is the only country on earth that can't do that? Why do we get such vitriol directed at us when we try to control our borders, when we ask that you at least come here legally, then we're haters, we're not inclusive, we don't want any diversity, we're racist, all of those things. When almost every country in the world asks something of the people who immigrate there.
That's exactly right. Look, there's been a war on border security going back at least 30 years. And the reality is that there's nothing more normal, nothing more logical. Every country has the right to determine who comes into their country and the circumstances under which they come.
It's our home. Do you let just any stranger come into your home?
And you don't
know who they are, but they're just here now.
That's so right.
No. They're not just here. No. They're not just here now. They're family.
Yeah, right.
You're not somebody who broke into the house.
Yeah.
You're family.
I got 68 people downstairs in the basement. They're just, it's a new family of ours. it's ridiculous.
It is. The left are running the narrative. They've captured all of those cultural institutions that shape the culture and shape the messaging. And unfortunately, the messaging is now that if you just demand that, you know, we make sure that we vet people coming from dangerous countries to the United States, all of a sudden that makes you racist and bigoted and you're defaming the character of those people. So unfortunately, political correctness is causing there to be a lack of clear-mindedness, a lack of right thinking in the culture and in the country, and that's really why we need to fight it as hard as we possibly can.
Have you seen anybody? By the way, we're talking to Nick Adams, the founder and executive director of FLAG. Have you seen any evidence of some of the students having a realization when you're there? Do you think you're having an impact?
Absolutely. Look, we were in St. Louis, Missouri, back in December, and this was one of the four private schools that we've spoken at. It was a Catholic school, St. Louis University High School was its name. And there were six African-American students. And I'm here to report to you that race relations in St. Louis, Missouri are at an all-time low, of course, after 8 years of the Obama administration and them driving
and the
Ferguson Texas-sized
stuff.
Truck straight through deliberately to break open that chasm. And anyway, there were about 100 students. It was an after-school event. And these six African-American students came and sat in the second row. And they pushed back hard because I told them that this is the best country in the world for a black person to live, and that America is the least racist, multiracial country in the world, and that this is the only place where they're free to color outside of the lines, where they can fall down 5,000 times, get up 5,001, where they can do whatever it is that they want to do. And unfortunately, they had just been brainwashed into believing that because they were black, America was a terrible place. Anyway, and I asked them to tell me if they knew any black people in their community that had ever left America to go anywhere else. And the answer was no. And then I asked them if they were aware that more black Africans have immigrated voluntarily to the United States than came as slaves. They again told me no. Anyway, and there was some very, very heated discussion back and forth for the next 2 hours because this was an after-school event.
Wow.
And at the very conclusion, those six African-American students came up to me and they said, "Mr. Adams, we want to say thank you for coming to our school. We're not sure yet whether or not we agree with you, but we want to tell you that you put things in a way that we hadn't previously considered."
How great is that?
And for me, that was a victory.
That's
for
awesome.
For me, because I'm going to go back
that
there.
That is a victory.
And talk to those
students. Right,
that's how we win back the future.
Right.
That's how we transform a generation.
What is it like to be an African American? What is it like to be an African Australian?
Well, exactly. Look, we don't have too many Africans in Australia. But look, this is the only place where anybody can rise above the circumstances of their birth to go and achieve whatever they want to achieve. And I told those students,
people don't believe that, Nick.
I mean, they think
that Australia, I mean, you know, it's just like the United States. What is the difference?
The difference is massive, Glenn. In Australia, success is resented. In Australia, you can't colour outside of the lines. You can't blaze a trail. You can't leave a legacy. People are rooting for your failure rather than your success. People strive for mediocrity as opposed
sadly,
to greatness.
Sadly, that's starting to take root.
But that's why we're fighting back. That's why I go and I tell these kids that the day that they were born in the United States of America is the day that they won the lottery of life.
It's true.
And they got a head start on everyone. And I beg them, I implore them, I beseech them to never, ever buy into this false narrative posited by the left that America is this bigoted and awful place. This is a country of unlimited opportunities. You can do anything. And so FLAG is doing these uplifting, motivational, patriotic talks at these schools. We've got the world's first kid-friendly constitution. Glenn, you're going to love this. We've got the US Constitution translated by Scalia interns into plain English that even an 8-year-old can understand.
Oh, I love that. Is it available online?
Yes.
Can I find that?
Not yet. We're about 6 weeks away, but I want to come back on the show and tell you about it. But I can tell you this is the world's first kid-friendly constitution. We responded. The kids were saying we love the constitution, but we're turned off by it because it's hard to understand. So
you do
now,
the Declaration of Independence as well?
Yes, sir, we have. That's right up next. Yes, we have. So we want to get that into the hands of as many kids as we can in America.
So you got it to eight-year-old levels. If we can get it to maybe 4-year-old, then I think maybe voters will actually start to understand.
No kidding.
That would be great.
Yeah. Well, look, that's right. We wanted to make it relatable. So we've got images, we've got graphic designs, we've got cartoons, and we're going to do it in a nice big format, not the usual size of the Constitution. It's going to be for kids all the way from 8 years old up until 18. And because we want our kids tethered to the values and the virtues that emanate from the Constitution that catapulted America to the pinnacle nation on this earth.
Any way they get it is great, right? I mean, seriously, look, instead of telling them, we know it's difficult, butch up, dummy, read it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Look, and it's not going to be a substitute for the real thing. There are obviously indispensable phrases in the Constitution that we want them to know. But just small things like saying to form a more perfect union, to form a more perfect country. It's just small things like that that will hopefully make sure that kids will be really drawn and magnetized to the Constitution, because that's the greatest political document ever written. And we want kids, we want the next generation of Americans to understand the centrality of that document to America's continued prosperity and success.
Nick Adams, so glad that you're here. Glad you're a friend of ours. And God bless you on all of the work that you're doing. Founder and executive director of FLAG, the Foundation for Liberty and American Greatness, Nick Adams. You can find more information and I would imagine make a donation to help his 501c3 out.
We would love
at
that.
FLAGUSA.org. If it sounds like something that you want to be involved with, go to FLAGUSA.org. Thanks, Nick. We'll talk to you again later.
Glenn Beck program.
Wow. You know, we didn't get a chance to talk about how Hooters is now considering hiring a bunch of men because they're getting so much flack.
Mm-hmm.
And reminds me of when Pat and I
opened up the Baltimore Hooters.
We did.
The Inner Harbor opened up a Hooters, and we came in and wore the hot pants and did the serving that day.
And
we looked hot, though.
I am so very grateful. This is one of those moments you can look back and be grateful for certain things, like no iPhones.
In 1990, yeah. That's a really good thing.
There's got to be a Polaroid somewhere.
Don't think so. I don't think there's a picture that survived.
By the way, daylight savings starts this weekend.
Don't forget.
Yeah.
So we fall back.
No, you spring ahead.
Yeah. Crap.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.